Welcome, WTIC. Todd Feinberg here on a Wednesday afternoon. Excited, as always, to be getting together with you. There is stuff always in the news that reminds us of just how manipulative power is. For example, just a little example, front page of the Hartford paper today. Peers back Lamont on tolls. Two Republican governors, right? Are they both Republican? Well, now I'm blanking on Gina Raimondo, but Charlie Baker in Massachusetts, Republican. Gina, well, maybe she's a Democrat, but she fought the unions nevertheless. But there they are clustering with Governor Lamont and offering him support for the idea of tolls. And there they are, the power structure. There they are, the people who don't know the politics of Connecticut, but they just want to get together and be buddy-buddy. They just want to be buddy-buddy with another governor. They want to extend a courtesy to him, but they don't understand that Massachusetts has tolls. Last year, the toll revenue for Massachusetts jumped way up. Massachusetts, biggest toll collector in New England by far, collected $390 million last year. A state twice the size, twice the population of Connecticut. Let's just call it $400 million, so the math is easy, in case you're as bad at math as I am. Massachusetts, with its turnpike tolls and a couple of bridges and tunnels, $400 million a year, the largest revenue by far from tolls anywhere in New England. And Connecticut, half the size, half the population of Massachusetts, wants $800 million, twice as, well, they really want $1 billion, but they've scaled it back for, they're willing to suffer the loss of the $200 million until after they get it passed. And then when they have to, when they have it all passed, then they can do whatever they want. They raise it like crazy. But just think about that. Charlie Baker offering his courtesy support to Governor Lamont. What does he know about how ridiculous Lamont's proposal is here in the state? He knows nothing. Gina Raimondo in Rhode Island, she says, oh, you need tolls like we have tolls. We put in truck tolls. Guess how much in their first year of tolls Rhode Island brought in? No, you can't guess. It's too ridiculous a number. $7 million. Short on what the governor is looking for by $793 million. But she's telling Lamont, go for it, go. Hey, Mike, Frank's here, if you can run him in. Just a little perspective on how ridiculous this is, how outrageous it is that anybody should care. I mean, why is that even a front page story, top of the fold? What's that all about? Oh, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But that's what they do. Power takes care of power. Power takes care of power. They stick up for each other because they're the powerful. It's them against the people. And in the war against the people, the powerful work together. That's what they do. And that's what they're doing in that top of the fold front page story. That is a waste of our time, but there it is. It's not a waste of our time. I'm glad it's there because we got to talk about it. All right, Frank Farriker is here. He's a regular guest on the program, but he came in studio today because he's been in the news lately. How you doing, Frank?
I'm doing all great. Did you sweep the room before I got here?
I always keep it very clean. Yes, I even use the wipies on the counter and everything. So the biological material shouldn't be too bad. Now, I don't think I don't even have a glass case here, so you have nothing to fear.
Okay, good. I'm glad to say I'm looking around for something else.
Nobody will hear a word we say.
Yeah, it's just between us. Exactly. Let's keep this between us.
So you've been in the news because 5 years ago, when you were the chairman of the board of the state lottery, you were spied upon by one of your employees
Yes.
Tell me what I get wrong here. Who had a friend who worked at the FBI, so she went to the friend and said, can you help me spy on my boss because I hate my boss?
Yeah, pretty much. There was a hearing for another employee of the lottery who was claiming that he was
discriminated
against. Not discriminated against, that he was retaliated against. And in the course of that hearing, his attorney asked this person, have you ever gone to any law enforcement to discuss any matters of the lottery? Mm-hmm. And this person said, yes, I went to the FBI. And I was told it was something like one of those Perry Mason moments, you know, where everybody sort of drops everything. And,
yes.
And you know,
well, that's pretty dramatic.
Yeah.
Especially for the FBI to be involved with investigating state government or an agency of the state without the state knowing about it.
That's the part that amazes me. For some reason, for as yet undetermined reasons, there was this fantastic need by this person and the previous president of the lottery to go to the FBI. Apparently, their thoughts were so dynamic. They were so powerful that they couldn't talk to the security office or the legislatures.
In other words, the internal mechanisms that existed to be able to resolve this type of issue. She had to jump over everybody's head and go right to the federal government's national investigative unit in order to check out Frank Farrakhan.
Yes, the public corruption unit.
You know, I have a lot of complaints about you, but...
So, but
somehow you don't strike me as this nefarious character who requires monitoring by J. Edgar Hoover.
No. My wife was wondering where the bribe money went because we have to put two kids through college and we're taking out loans. So they went to the – and then as it was testified in court that this Ann Noble – then apparently was given a secret recording device, which was placed in something like an eyeglasses case. And
yeah.
And I don't recollect having a meeting with an eyeglasses case, but...
Yes, but it's not the kind of thing, as acute as your intellect is. I don't know that you would have noticed a stray eyeglass case on the table.
I'm looking around to see if you're tricking me right now. Is there one? So apparently, for whatever nefarious acts that I may or may not have committed... This person was given a glasses case to record our conversations secretly so that I suppose they could take them back to the FBI for dramatic analysis.
But the story was that she had whatever story she told to her friend mm-hmm. sounded big enough that he had to actually call it in.
That's right. And then allegedly they had multiple meetings about it. And of course, the ironic part was, you know, 3 years later, I then succeed to be the interim president of the lottery. And of course, nobody felt reason to mention that along the way. So I suppose it wasn't that important. But it does make you wonder. I mean, you know, who were they recording all the rest of the time? Why were they recording? When does it end? What is the obligation of somebody? It's just the idea that somebody could do that to me.
The idea that,
anybody.
It shows lots of dangers. But one of the empowerment dangers of relationships, because mm-hmm. This Turner character had a friend in the FBI, apparently, that lowered the threshold of entry to her. Of doing something that you would never do. The idea of picking up the phone and calling the FBI for somebody who you don't have any substantive claims to make against, but he's your boss and you can't stand him for whatever reason.
And apparently it wasn't even a substantive claim. It was a feeling. It was mentioned as a feeling. So because somebody...
Feelings.
Nothing more than feelings. So apparently because
trying
of
a, to forget my... I'm sorry, I'll
career.
Do a whole song.
That's right, I'll be here all night. Try the veal. The whole point is that the idea that you feel this powerful nature so much so that you feel exempted from following the chain of command or doing because you want
or
what you want.
How about giving somebody you work with the benefit of the doubt?
Yeah.
I mean, it is easy to hate your boss. It's kind of an American pastime.
Pretty much.
And to assign them the most nefarious of motives is a national pastime as well, I think.
Yes.
But if we all had a friend at the FBI, like the friend apparently that Ms. Turner had, then every boss would apparently be under investigation.
That's right. Everybody would wind up being their own junior FBI themselves. And you know how that works out at the end of the day.
It was bad enough having J. Edgar Hoover. So as you hear this story about you, Frank Farrakhan, you know, innocent, well-meaning, intellectually honest, if confused ideologically, guy, how do you put it together?
It is shocking to put together. You know, the first thing I want to find out is, what did I do? I'd like to know what
So you have no clue?
No clue whatsoever.
Was there any tension in the office?
No, that's the other amusing part. I never even felt that there was tension along. And apparently in the court case, this person said that she never liked me, that I was always – and my favorite line was, I worked by my own rules. So don't you find it interesting that working by your own rules, yet somebody else going out and freelancing to the FBI is somehow a team player? I can't put that one all together.
Well, you were the boss.
That's right. That's the problem.
So what do you, share some reactions and how you think about this, the context you put in, and you suddenly, you know, it's been 5 years since you left the lottery.
Right.
And suddenly out of the blue, you're in the paper.
Right. And here's my biggest concern. This is the part that I've been wondering about, which is when somebody goes to the FBI on you, somebody makes a claim against you to a government agency, who do you know? Who are they talking to? Were they doing an investigation? Were they talking to people? Were they talking?
You mean who was the FBI talking to?
Who was the FBI? Who was anybody talking to about me? Were they spreading?
Oh, like were others privy to these?
Right.
Was there gossip going around about you?
Right. Mm-hmm. Has this been trailing me? You know, and is this what happens when somebody engages in that kind of behavior? It's just so. My first question is, what did I do? And then, what have they been telling people that I did?
Okay,
I would like to
anybody
know
knows what Frank did wrong.
Call him in.
call right
him
in. Now.
That's right.
How about beyond that? Does it make you have any other thoughts? I mean, I just obviously this must have been tumultuous when the story came out a couple of weeks ago.
I was
shocked.
I was shocked. I was truly shocked. And to me, I just think that somebody's got to find out what the hell happened here.
I'm sorry. I'm late for a break. I wasn't paying attention.
No
Hang
problem.
On. Frank Farrakhan's here. We're talking about his life of crime. Stay with us on WTIC. We're having a little debate here, but it's a separate topic. I don't know. Maybe you don't have that much to say about this. What do you want people to know about this story about you and your time at the lottery and you being investigated?
Well, I think it was quoted in the paper. It scares the hell out of me that somebody can be involved in any function of a government job and get the notion that somebody behind them would think that there's an opportunity to go and contact the FBI and go off topic of that. And it makes you wonder, I mean, just how far down the rabbit hole are we in terms of power over responsibility?
Now, which power are you thinking? Because I think about FBI power, and I say the FBI should not exist probably because this is the natural conclusion of having a federal police force, is that people are calling it in all the time. They love the idea they can call in the feds. But does the state of Connecticut not have police who can conduct an investigation?
Absolutely. And I don't think that they have a bad reputation for the work that they do. But the FBI takes you to a far greater level. It takes the amount from people I've talked to over the last few days, the amount of accountability that the FBI has for what they say and what they do is almost non-existent. I could call the FBI and you right now and talk about all the incredible crimes that you've committed. And it appears that if I sell the story well enough,
if you know how to build it,
if I know how to build it, they're going to start investigating you. And as they investigate you, then you're going to you're going to find yourself in places that you can't even bring yourself back on. And all of this for a volunteer chairman of the board of the Connecticut Lottery.
Yeah.
you know.
So this is what brings me back to my values, mm-hmm. and that's what the founders believed in. The founders believed in local government. There was nothing going to be good going on in Hartford, but they knew that at least if policy was being made in Hartford, then the people of Connecticut would have a shot at being able to influence it. The people might be embarrassed to be investigating the chairman of the state lottery commission with no evidence simply because somebody wanted them to, one of the employees who didn't like the boss. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're just a guy in the federal investigating agency, what do you know about the state lottery commission?
But even scarier about the federal, one attorney told me, he said, it wouldn't have mattered if they called in and they had said, oh, well, you know, the chairman of the Connecticut lottery, you know, wears five hats on his head. If they heard that there was a potential something going on at a lottery, because they would all dive and punch each other out to get to the phone first so they could handle it. It's a sexy story, right. And the idea that for some unknown experience, there were three meetings and secret recordings to find out the problem first rather than the
introduction to the investigation.
That's right. Let's go get them first, and then maybe later on.
And then
we'll
you have the full weight and force of the federal government and all the money in the world to do a prosecution based on maybe that political value for that people in that agency of doing that kind of investigation rather than an appropriate protocol for triggering that sort of investigation.
That's right. And there was no protocol. And again, who knows what really happened? Who knows, what a file says on me? Who knows what other people have been told? And there's no recourse to that. And to utilize the mechanics, the tools of the state government to lean on a friend at the FBI to essentially what amounts to gather dirt on an opponent. That's the times when I come over closer to your side.
So what do you make of today's story?
Which story today?
That that she's been suspended.
Well,
that's the right word. I don't know if that's the right.
My understanding, and again, this is just third party, was that she was suspended because 5 years ago she did not tell the regulator of the lottery.
She didn't follow protocol.
Mm-hmm. So it is kind of gratifying that you know there are some sort of repercussions for going the wrong way. But
you're not putting too much.
No, I'm not.
I got excited when I saw it because I smelled a rat when I heard the first story. I said, this doesn't make any sense. None of this makes any sense. Frank Farrakhan, nice guy, down-to-earth guy, doing this, like you say, volunteer job, and suddenly an employee has you investigated by the FBI because she has a friend who's in the FBI.
That's right.
Well, already that story falls apart right there.
It all falls apart. And then, when there was an issue regarding one of those people leaving the lottery, that just sort of exacerbated the story mm-hmm. even more. It's a mess. It's a mess.
And, all right.
I'm not excited about it.
All right. We're going to get to a news update. Do we have anything more to say about this, or should we go into politics and our usual type of stuff after this?
I'm all good with that.
All right. Frank Farrakhan is here. He joins us every week, but it's only recently that he became a big nefarious celebrity in the state. So it's exciting. We have
front page articles.
Time for news on WTIC. Alrighty. It is the home of the revolution, where you come to revolt, to get the ideas and the energy that you need. Todd Feinberg here. Frank Farrakhan is visiting. He's the former Greenwich chairman of the Democratic Town Committee, former chairman of the State Lottery Commission, who you may have been reading about in the news because he was investigated by the FBI. Someday that will be a badge of honor, I suppose. And maybe you'll even have the tapes available that you'll be able to play to friends at parties and stuff. Oh, wait a sec. Sorry. Go ahead.
That'd be great, too. Maybe there's a movie in here. If there's any script writers in your
My
in your
Life
audience.
Of Crime by Frank Farrakhan.
That's right. I Love it.
Yeah, that's great. All right, so let's talk some politics because there's a lot going on. And we were chatting off air about the tweet storm and the level of excitement. And you said off air, well, of course, they're racist tweets. And I would ask you to define what that means. What does racist mean in that statement?
As I see it, the idea that you're telling someone or essentially condemning somebody to leave, to go back to, quote, where you came from, when it's fully known that three of those four women came from, I believe, Detroit, Cincinnati, and New York, progressively.
But he's on Twitter. Where you came from could, in colloquial terms, mean where your family came from, could it not?
If you want to stretch that to a great extreme, you know, I'm sort of, you know, done with the idea that we treat Donald Trump's tweets a little bit differently because it's just a stream of consciousness. It's what he said. He wanted to generate some publicity or some rancor against a couple of people who he felt that he could focus some attention on, these four women who are congressmen. And he, in my opinion, very directly went after them from a racial standpoint. Go back where you came from. Obviously, they're all four women. One's African-American. The other three are of
different.
Clearly, I thought it was, without a doubt, a racist statement. And what amused me—
And what does that mean, though? What's your definition of racist when you're saying it in that sentence?
When you're utilizing the ethnic or racial component of somebody in order to disparage them.
Okay. That's helpful. I just want to understand. So to me, of course, the Democratic Party is the party of racism. They are constantly doing what they're doing right now, distracting from important things in order to heighten the racial divide in the country because they feed off a sense of racial animus.
Okay, so why would the president dive into that and stir the pot?
Because he wants the truth about the Democratic Party to be blatantly visible for everybody to see. That truth is promoted by those four. So he highlights those four in such a way as to cause the Democrats to go wild for days, yelling racism, xenophobia, which they do every day about any number of things, because those words have so much value for them in the way they do politics, because they're about racial divide, they're about racial animus, they're about distracting people from actual policy problems, like minorities get shot in the areas where Democrats rule on a regular basis. Minorities go to horrible schools in the areas that that Democrats run every day. Kids are in danger in Democratic neighborhoods. And if they can keep everybody fixated on the fact that it's not institutional racism that's a problem, it's that all these white supremacists out there hate you, then that works for Democrats as a policy.
The idea that this is a nine-dimensional chess plan on the part of the president, I think, is a little
I don't think that's particularly complex.
I think merely he said something that he felt would get people going because he had a certain amount of people who he felt were his prime antagonists. And so what he did
But also ones who Democrats are vulnerable because Nancy Pelosi has been working to marginalize, and he's looking at her trying to marginalize her four radical left-wing American-hating members of Congress, and he wants to not let her get away with separating herself from
them. But as he has gone along, he has taken his points of view from ones that I would consider just particularly useless to ones now that are racist and dangerous. He is actually using his position as president of all of us to drive a wedge between people of color and people who are not.
But this is what the Democratic Party does as a business model. So all he's doing is entering their swamp. And
so, right, way to drain the swamp. Aren't you supposed to transcend as a president.
Well, but that's a different accusation. If you want to say, given that the Democrats are racist in their daily operative modes, and he's getting in their pool with them, that's bad.
I'm not telling my kids that because they said something disgusting, that because somebody else did it, that therefore your personal behavior
that's
is
perfectly
not
fine. If you want to accuse Trump of being as bad as the Democrats, I'm willing to go along with that accusation.
I think he's as bad as you think the Democrats are. I think he's just
So you don't believe the Democrats are actually engaging in that?
No,
are they not playing race?
No,
are they not playing games of race? Or
there is, I will not lie to you and tell you that there is not a component of that in the Democratic Party.
Okay, so their cries of racism are meaningless because that's their game.
You don't get a free pass for committing a crime.
But they commit this crime every day.
You don't get it. So
every week in Chicago, which they never address, there's dozens of people shot.
So if you
take ownership of it, never try to deal with it.
If you put a recording device
devices
in this phone over here, does that mean that everybody else gets a pass on the law? You don't get a pass because somebody else.
I'm not saying you get a pass. If we're so concerned about politicians who are dancing around the racial nerve of the country, let's look at the people for whom it's an essential business model.
So you call out the racist words that they say, and that's fine, and that is completely worthwhile. But to not put the president's words in a vacuum, to say that because you have opinions of the Democratic Party and that some people in the Democratic Party on occasion will use racial wedges.
On occasion.
will use racial wedges to win an election or to win a point. Does not liberate him from the fact that he made a racist statement.
And yet, never accuses them of being racist. Nobody accuses them of being racist. I'm alone here stating the obvious.
But it doesn't, again, it doesn't matter. The guy said something that was racist. The president of the United States should not state racist things.
So to me, it's not constructive to use those kinds of words. Democrats shouldn't do it. I don't think you should say the president's being racist. I don't think they should do it. I think they're only using that kind of language because it gets their base excited. It's the crudest kind of politics.
That is what many commentators have been saying, that perhaps to divert attention from the Mueller testimony next week, or to divert attention from some of the crisis at the border. This was a fantastic way to rip across two or three.
For Trump, you're saying?
For Trump, to rip across two or three news cycles.
And wouldn't the Democrats, if they wanted to be the thoughtful, compassionate party that they are, why wouldn't they sidestep this whole controversy and focus on something real and important instead of getting in this pissing match with him, which is all about base politics and not about doing good governance.
And very bad for our country.
Yes, there you go. All right, we found something to agree on. Eric is calling from Rocky Hill. Frank Farriker is here. Hi, Eric.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I just wanted to educate your guest. I tuned in late. I'm not sure who I heard.
Frank
the name.
Is always sure looking for an
always
education.
For an
He's
education.
Frank Farriker. He's a Democrat, former head of the Greenwich Democratic Town Committee, former head of the state lottery.
Thank you. Okay, so just to fill him in, racism is when you believe one race is better than the other. Period. That's it.
Well, that's the dictionary definition.
Excuse me. Learn to use the term racism appropriately before you run around throw it out there and just accuse the president of making racist remarks when clearly that's not what he did. Clearly, any educated person.
Well, don't be so pompous about it, Eric. There are different ways of looking at this. You're right that the dictionary definition of racism is believing that based on their race, some group of people is inferior. But in practice, it's gotten loosened up, and clearly the Democrats call people racist every day, to the point where the reason I asked Frank for a definition on racism when he accuses the president of engaging in it is because it's lost a lot of its meaning because it's used in such frequency. It's like machine gun fire of accusations of racism, xenophobia, homophobia. The Democrats are trying to create victims all the time and make sure those alleged victims are feeling the weight of their alleged suffering every day.
And one other quick thing, you know, when I guess he had an issue with the lottery, you know, there's companies every day that fire people without investigating, or they investigate afterwards. And I'm a perfect example of that. I was accused of something years ago. I ended up getting my job back because they investigated and found out I didn't do it. But they fired me first. And yep. So that's a problem for all types of people in all environments, not just state and town and government. That happens everywhere. Everywhere you go.
I think Frank would have preferred to be fired from the lottery than to have an FBI investigation mounted against him. 860-522-9842. Thank you, Eric, for the phone call. We'll take some more calls coming up with Frank Farriker on WTIC. WTIC, Todd here, letting the good times roll with Frank Farriker. Let's go to Matt in Newington. Hello there, Matt. Yes, sir, go ahead. Matt, don't do that. Sit on hold all that time and then not be paying attention. Let's try RP in Wallingford. Hi, RP.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
Good. Say hi to Frank as well.
Frank, hello.
How are you?
Although I can't disagree with you more, I call these four clowns of color because nobody talked. They bought up their color. He didn't. All he's talking about is their awful, vile statements that they make.
What does that mean, go back to where you came from? Can you explain to me what go back to where you came from? But how do you know? How can you then tell me what he said by not addressing what he actually said, what he actually wrote?
What he's doing is he's calling them out for their vile, anti-American, anti-Semitic, despicable comments.
By telling them to go back where they came from. What is that?
Well, you know what? I'm glad maybe you could make a case that he went over the line a little bit. But you know what? It's better than just, oh, we all get along. Because what these four women did is, or what they say and what they represent is reprehensible.
Okay, so four first-term Congress people from reliably Democratic districts who don't sit on committees, who don't have any sort of power whatsoever, is a mortal threat to the president of the United States, who could literally annihilate a country.
No, they're a mortal threat to the Democrats.
Well, then what?
They're also a mortal threat to this country. That's not how you talk about this country.
So
they are despicable.
So four people.
Despicable human beings. They don't belong in Congress.
Okay, so they don't, but do they belong in the country?
You know what? I wish they would leave too, because their comments are despicable. Someone did something? That's how you describe 9/11?
So you do think it's reasonable to kick people out of the country, or at least encourage them to leave the country because you don't like socialists?
No,
is socialism a deportable offense?
It's worse than socialism. Someone did something? That is absolutely despicable.
Okay, so being unclear is now a deportable event.
RP, thank you for making the point. RP made the point that I don't think we're going to get it resolved, though. Bill in South Windsor. Hi, Bill.
Hi, guys. Listen, I think everyone's forgetting that look at the whole statement that Trump made. He didn't say leave. He said, if you don't like it here, leave.
No, if you don't like it here, go back to where you came from, is what he said.
Basically, what he's saying is, if you don't like America, then leave America.
But where did they come from? Is he suggesting that Congressman Presley go back to Cincinnati?
This is a 72-year-old guy tweeting, and what he means is, if you don't like America, then get out.
But why is...
I honestly do not believe that he was saying to send each one back.
Wait, Bill, you don't think he understands how much energy there is in those words, and he uses them deliberately he can control the news cycle?
You know what? I think he does. But the point I'm making is that deep down, he wasn't telling these people, get out of the country. He was saying, if you don't like it, then leave.
But how do you know what he deep down means? Why don't you just trust the president for the words that he uses? Why is everybody so eager to find new interpretations? Well, even though he said, go back to where you came from, perhaps to Representative Omar. No, he didn't say that. He said, go back to.
Listen to his talk. He said, if you don't like it here, then leave.
Yeah, that was his follow-up to the original tweet, though, I believe.
Okay. That is the follow-up.
I'll give you that, but I think I think that everything is, without a doubt, being blown out of proportion.
Yes, because the Democrats love to heighten the sense of racial animus in the country.
There's no question. There's no question. Listen, I'm 60 years old, and I remember when I was a little kid going through all the race riots and things in the early 60s, in the mid-60s. And you know what? Our country's in worse condition now for race relations than it was then.
Well, I would posit to you that people did things with their fists and their dollars and their guns in the 60s and the 70s than now they do with their words. And to the respect that there is racial animosity in this country, of that there is no doubt. But I don't think that you can say, regardless of what the president said or regardless of what anyone feels the Democrats do, that we have not made enormous strides as a country since the 60s and the 70s when we had race riots in the streets. I think you'd be doing all of us a disservice. And that's why the president's words are so scary to me.
Wait, what's the progress you see that we've made since those days of riots in the streets?
Well,
are you talking about that instead of violence, people are having discussions or something else?
Well, for example, most of the problems of the 60s, I think, came from a profound lack of opportunity in African-American neighborhoods, in Hispanic neighborhoods, and places where people felt so marginalized and so without.
We just have a few seconds.
And so
way,
without so. Help that they had to take to the streets because they felt that
there was
that
no other mechanism through which
now
to
many
express
people
themselves.
Are putting the through the words of people like Representative Omar.
Mm-hmm.
You may not like it,
but it's think, a channel
but
through
it is
which
a channel.
That energy can be expressed.
And that's why the president's words make me fearful, because are we going backwards in terms of the progress?
All right, that's
made.
Frank Farriker. Thanks for coming in studio. It's great to
sure.
have you here.